subtract them from the 819 that left, say, 500 or something, and then we had to count that every missile was destroyed. In that way, Iraq tried to say, well, we have lost them, disappeared, you know. We couldn't accept such answers. We had to see each one. Or they say, we tested it, it disappeared, testing. Then we wanted to see the order to test and the program for testing. Mm. So we were sure that this, we could tick off that.
Mm.
Same when they imported highly sensitive machines, or say fermenters, big fermenters which we use for biological weapon production. We had to see all of them and supervise the destruction. And we could get information through countries which had exported.
Mm.
So we had to be in touch with all countries outside. So our technique was in that way to find this hard web. In the end, however, something was left. And that was especially a description of the programs, documents in that sense, which we needed to read to see that we had seen everything. Lists of what they had imported. We wanted to see that list, so we could then tick off the whole items. In that way, we could go to security council and say everything. Mm-hmm. What happened in the last year, I would say 90, all the time in some degree, but especially during 96, 97, and that continued after that, they moved it. They put it on trucks and big caravans,
mm-hmm.
and were moving them around in the country. When our team arrived, they followed our team through, you know, sending signals, and they say, now the team is going there, and now it's turning left, now it's going to another road up in that direction, and their caravans, they moved away from us all the time. We tried to cover that with YouTube and also with friendly support from American satellite, but the satellite is not there always, so we had tried to time our things so we could get signals from the satellite and from the YouTube, where are they moving, or from, could bring up our helicopter and try to see. So it was
major operation.
Yeah, and but it was frustrating in the sense that they evaded us, and if on a few occasions we managed to corner them, say, then they blocked us entry. I mean, we had no weapons. We couldn't force ourselves. We couldn't, you know, shoot ourselves in. So we, handful of scientists, or you know, they are not cowboys, they are not commanders. So we had to complain to the security council, say, council answered warning. So, and that created unnecessary, I think, frustration. And even if it had, it was fun also to try to counter. It was a little boyish. To counter it with a big adventure.
Oh, obviously, it's a big adventure, yeah. And what methods did the Iraqis use to hide the weapons programs? We went through that they...
Mobile.
Yes, exactly. Did they try to confuse the UN by other means?
First of all, orally, we wanted... One way we had developed technique was to interrogate not the politician, but the, you know, the worker. And the scientists with them. So we had our team went in with Arabic translators, and we had tried to cross-examine. And you know, our scientists were not trained in such things. They had sharp mind. So I employed a man from Scotland Yard, the British police headquarters, expert in cross-examination. So he followed this. We brought in an expert of that type of it to be with our team, so they helping in cross-examination. These examinations were highly successful because the Iraqis were contrary. If we took one at a time and we interrogated one officer, then we sent him out of the room, then we took in the next, put the same questions. And if they were lying, of course it didn't work. They contradicted themselves immediately. They told the truth. It hang together reasonably well. But as soon as civilized, we detected that. That led Iraqi to block these, try to block these interrogations. So we had another major crisis, I think it was the summer 96 or so, and I had to work very hard on Tariq Aziz, try to mobilize the Security Council, and it was not easy. The Security Council, you know, invested in interviews, is that so important? You have to explain everything so they pump it into their brains. Yes, it is important. Oh yeah, but why should we make it fuss of? Well, I want it to be made fuss of. So we, after even long, arduous discussions, we forced Iraq to agree on a system for interrogation. They insisted that high officers should be present in the room and investigate with the low-level personnel. And of course, they were frightened coming in and seeing this guy who probably could put them to jail or, you know, kill them or something. They were very nervous, and that undercut the quality of the interview, obviously. And they also insisted that, or they stopped the interview when it became dangerous, you know, going hard. So the officer jumped in and said, "Oh, stop this," and, you know, so block the poor man, or they tried to couch him and say, you remember wrong, it was not so, you know. Oh, yes, sir, you know.
Yeah.
So it was...
What led to this crisis?
Well, it led... we protested. I said, this is unacceptable. We must be able to freely talk to these individuals who have been involved in the weapons programs.
So it was...
In the part of, for us, getting what I call a coherent picture. That was the key.
So it was a sort of a developing problem.
Yes, it was. That's one example. There are many others, but that was fell in my mind.
Did the Iraqis try to manipulate other member states of the UN? Did that work? Did you ever discover that they were doing that? Did other countries simply volunteer to help them?
It was a systematic policy of Tariq Aziz, who is a brilliant diplomat, as you probably know.
Yes.
They had some other good people also, but he was in a class of his own. And he traveled frequently to capitals, to Moscow, Paris, where he was well received. He would travel, however, to Rome, to Madrid. He traveled to China, Beijing. He traveled to India. He traveled to many places, even to Bonn, I think, to Germany at some occasion. And all the time tried to talk bad about us. Look how they behave, they are insisting, they are not civilized, they are not respectful towards us, and so on. And also explaining our program looks like this. It is, we have accounted for everything, and so on, year out and year in. My problem was, and I had to counter that, so I had to follow his travel schedule and try to go back. So when he went to Moscow, I had to go to Moscow after, and sit down, and also call up their ambassador in New York at the minimum, and ask what did he say, and if it was serious enough, I went, had to go myself to have a session with the same people and explain, ask the country to ask questions, are they concerned, tell us what. So it was, it demanded a dynamic diplomacy. It was not only searching, it was you had to all the time counter here the moves.
It's like guarding a child.
Yes, sort of, yes. He was an unruly child in that sense. And you had to counter so it didn't give damage. And that was what problematic. It was anyhow possible because we had the truth on our side. We had the facts on our side. So I think we won every such a fair competition about the hearts and minds. But when we started, the problem was that then the matter of economy came into play. Iraq very clearly stated to countries that if you support us, we will see to it you will get part of our oil wealth when things get better. You will get your right to export support and settle your industry in place here and work with us. And Iraq is a country which you can't ignore because of the rich cash flow they have, which is potentially enormous. It's one of the world's oil richest countries. So that, after a while, you had sometimes the feeling that some governments took the money issue into account rather than the substance, and that was very frustrating and problematic. And that demanded a lot from me as chairman to work in, because you are up against promises of hundreds of millions of dollars, maybe billions. And it is not easy to...
Couldn't the UN do anything?
No, not at all. UN was scared stiff about this to some degree. I wouldn't say the Secretary General, because I had excellent relationship with Jafar and great relationship with Kofi Annan, obviously. Respected even Peter Kouyar was in the beginning. All of them were great men. I mean, they had their style and different type of way to act, but they were very impressive persons. But on the other side, they kept the secretariat. The cultural secretariat was not enthusiastic about us. That's clear. Because the UN is created as a body to support and help, even you know, food gets out, UNICEF works, education help, even peacekeeping operations are based upon approval and welcoming of the governments concerned to fight. Irritated governments like to have UN in between as a protection against war. But we were not asked, we were different from us, we were not invited by Iraq, we were forced upon Iraq. So the culture of UN, which is cooperation, help, support, here for the first time the UN had, you know, a sort of interference, a sort of pressure, a sort of confrontational attitude, sort of. We were forced to confront their lies with our truth.
But still,
so that was a little, therefore UN as such, we had to base ourselves on the Security Council.
Yeah, but still the UNSCOM was created by, by the UN, where all the countries had agreed on something.
Yes.
So actually, it's a way of going behind the back of UN when doing a special treaty relationship, or I don't know what, with Iraq.
Yes, of course, but money talks.
It does. Okay. During the time you worked with UNSCOM, could you see any changes within the Iraqi people, the society, and the living standards?
Yes, definitely. I mean, you have to recall that the living standard was very low when we came in. Iraq had a high, was close to what could call takeoff economically in the late 70s, after the great oil price hikes which took place there, 73 and 78. And it was doing splendidly, and Iraq has also very, I would say, hard-working population. It's also as a relatively secular state in the Arabic world. The women are liberated much more, and they are much more active in, especially in education, medicine, and so on. So they are. I'm sorry.
About the living standards.
Yeah, yes. So we had a low in the war. You could imagine 8 years of war, what harm it gave to the economy. So the social structures were, I would say, starting to collapse during the war, because all the money, oil money went to munition, to tanks, to airplane, MiGs, Mirage. It went into, of course, buying technology for weapons mass destruction, and we took now $1 billion outside, several, many billion dollars. And they also, not even the money, the oil money, but they, of course, borrowed money, especially from Saudi Arabia, Kuwait, and others. Mm. So that means that the economy was really in pieces. That's why I think Saddam decided to occupy Kuwait in 1990. Because that was with a quick fix, you know, going to take Kuwait, a very rich country, swimming in money and oil, and just take it.
That and then claim that it used to be a Iraqi province.
Yes, absolutely. But he could do that, and that was a quick fix of the economic problem. But he, as he was thrown out, he couldn't repair the, he never succeeded in repairing the Iraqi. So the starting point was low. However, the sanctions which were put in place against Iraq as a consequence of the invasion of Kuwait, the, as I indicated in the first answer, the Security Council kept these sanctions in place. So that meant that the standard was low and bad, and as no real improvement came, it was a difficult situation. The Council recognized that and even said from the very beginning in 91 that Iraq is allowed to export certain large quantities of its oil to buy medicine and food for it. That was an offer Iraq rejected for several, many years, as a matter of fact, and not until 96. In spring 96, there was a deal where and it, one started to come to an agreement, and in early 97, the system of selling oil, getting food, came into place. But it's very important for history to record that Iraq had that offer from the beginning, but they rejected the offer. And there was a one-year negotiation of the on modalities, that was from 96 to 97, how this distribution of food should be carried out. Now, the agreement, I think, was less than satisfactory, even if it was better than nothing. We see now the result that the, as a result of the agreement between the UN and Iraq, Iraq was given the task to distribute the food. And UN only had the right to hardly even observe, but be present and see to it. That was the reason distributed. In these areas where this program is going on, there are still serious health problems. Yes. But in northern Iraq, where
the Kurds,
where Saddam couldn't control, that UN was given the job to distribute itself, and their living standard is now higher than it was before the war.
Oh, it's
so it is. Amazing. It shows that it also the way it is done, but which is highly frustrating. And you have seen a couple of Iraq UN officers in Iraq, who a man called Halliday and one from Sponik, two leaders of the control program, or what you call it, in central Iraq, who came out highly critical against the sanctions. Partly, I think, I think they were right, because their heart was in the right place. They saw people suffering and they really became upset. But part of their attacks on the UN was to protect themselves. I think that they know that they didn't carry out the distribution well, because the Kurdish, we had a Kurdish case showing that if it was done by the UN, it was very effective. But in the central, it was not effective. So that is, one must remember that there is also blame to put on the Iraqi government.
Yeah. How much did the Iraqi people understand about what Anscombe was doing? Did the Iraqi people help you in any way?
No, not at all. There was a constant propaganda from the first day saying we have nothing prohibiting.
But that's actually from Saddam.
Yes, but the people read that, then they heard about that we had detected something, because then they should think what is this? Didn't the leader told us?
Yeah.
Didn't tell us? Didn't the leader tell us there was nothing? Aha, there must be wrong this time. But that happened over and over again. That it was proven that God said nothing more. I went, not questioning the people, but say when I went to Moscow, I said, but Tariqas, he told you 94 there was nothing left. And now 95 we have detected so much. Shouldn't you stop trusting him? But that, as I said, was political. The Iraqi people had only access to TV, Iraqi TV, and to Iraqi newspapers. Uday's newspaper and others. So they had very little to go from. I mean, they cut off.
Didn't they write about what was found by you? No.
No, very little. It could maybe be built in by Arab-speaking BBC World Service, but it's a crime to listen to that. So they had difficulties to keep informed. So they, I think, but the situation was that I think the middle class was a very hard hit, and you saw that.
Mm.
They had to sell, I mean, they had little commodities like some carpets, they had to sell them to get food, they had to sell the refrigerator and so on. So they exhausted also, if they had some books, they tried to sell them and so on. It was really tragic to see how their quality of life went down.
You say the middle class actually was in most of them.
It was, yeah, I think so. The farmers came out better, because especially when there was no food and medicine, they could sell their stuff for enormous prices. So they even had to have the big horse drawn or carriages to take home with full of money. Because, you know, they have very violent inflation there.
Yeah.
Transport home all the money when they came to the market.
Must be a fashion plate.
Yes. But that change, of course, with the UN program.
Yeah. The Iraqis gave you a hard time completing your work. Can you tell us about such a situation? But I think you already...
Yeah, we are told.
Yes, you've already gone through that. The experts you had in your teams had various nationality. I have understood that it was very hard keeping them from briefing their governments about their work that they did with you, and that the information later ended up in the hands of the Iraqis. Is this true, and to what extent?
No, I think some. First of all, we had top quality experts, but each one of them had to sign a contract with me.
Mm.
Where they undertook to report only to me, and not to take order or instructions or inform the government about it. If the government wanted to know something, they had to turn to me, and I would decide how much they should. We gave out information, we protected high sensitive information, never gave out to any government. If some government say, in order to help us, say, to help their analysts and to give advice to us, wanted some piece of, say, inspection report. They could get that inspection report, but we deleted them sensitive things, like names of foreign companies having exported to Iran. We did that in order to keep cooperation with all states up on a high level. So, no, I think that is... tried to keep them informed in a legal fashion, order structured fashion. That doesn't exclude that some may talk a little about something, about their experience, but they were then in violation of what they had signed, and I think most of them did not do it. We had concern that some information was sometimes filtered back for Iraq. I don't think details, but warnings.
Warnings.
That now the team intend to do this, maybe the team intend to do that. We sharpened our security arrangements, our own protection, very, very much. Limited information to extremely few, especially our own targeting, of plans where we should go next time, was kept highly secret. It was only for myself and the mission planner and operations officer, the three of us who knew. Not even the team was allowed to know until they came into Iraq.
Yes,
we had to train them in advance, of course, if we intended to make an underwater exploration.
Because we did underwater explorations?
Oh, yes, we did, because we suspected that some nuclear capabilities or other were put, they had to underground, and they need them to send out water from that out in. Or that they hide, they were, throwing away, they tried to hide missile material equipment, which was smuggled from Russia. The Russians sold them in 95. Advanced guidance systems for missiles, long-range missiles. These systems ended up, some of them, in Iraq, and we went after them. They threw it in Tigris. We couldn't find them. But we figured that out. We had them to prepare, frogmen and others to swim and pick up. So, of course, then they could figure out when we started training that there was something with water. And when we flew in, they saw the packages in our airplane, heavy equipment with, all sorts of bathing arrangements, rubber clothes and so on. They understood that some water would happen.
Incredible. During your tenure, were there any secret listening devices to try to pick up information on the activities of the Iraqi Special Republican Guard or the Special Security Organization? If so, why did UNSCAM need such devices? Did the Americans or anyone else use this technology for other purposes?
That's a $64,000 question.
Okay.
No, but we had the right, according to the resolution, to use means for investigating new technology, new, as I told you, imaging, photography. And new sensors. We had lots of sensors of various sorts. A sensor could be as a chemical device where you put around the chemical facility, which picks up from the air.
Like molecules.
Yes, and that goes into filter, and this filter is taken to the laboratory we had in Baghdad. And there we could see what kind of chemicals were in the air. That was one way. We picked up water sampling all regularly to see if there were nuclear, signals in there. We flew with certain airplanes taking gamma radiation countings. So we got the hot spots over Iraq where there came radiation from the ground. So we could map that out, and then we could send out inspectors to go and see why was it something radiating out there, in order to detect their various nuclear activities. So these were sensors. We had also other types, but there was also type of sensors which we can say we picked up signals under certain circumstances. It was clear, and the questions would be put to Iraq, of course, all the time on us. Every word we said was taken. So when we had to have strong rules inside Iraq about speaking. I decided that we should counter that by listening to what they were saying, in order to support search for mobile. So that was, we had some techniques to do that in order to map out their countermeasures. However, there was obviously, and there was I made arrangements that this was a multinational effort. Mm. There was no American privilege.
Exactly.
No, not at all. We had various nationalities involved in that. The lead country was not America, for instance, in these operations. I didn't want to have an American. That doesn't exclude that, according to some reports, some people after I left, but that was more under the watch my successor, that one individual, specific person, broke his trust, obviously, and tried to organize some undercover from Moscow. I don't know if it's true or not. I don't say it's not true. Mm. But I had been on record saying that if it took place, it was stupid, and it was, it was stupid beyond belief, I think, which made some Americans aggressive. But I think it still was, because they couldn't get anything. They didn't know how to, it was just to listen out there somewhere. And maybe they got one or two, but if you don't have with a sensor, you don't get the truth with the sensor or with the listening device. Mm-hmm. You get if you can put it into a context where this is the piece of the puzzle.
Mm-hmm.
Then you can decide if it's of any value. It was, therefore I will stand with my statement on the that it could be unbelief if it took place.
What do you think were the reasons?
But it did no harm. I mean, the U.S. got nothing. If it took place,
didn't get anything nothing out of it.
That's what I mean. It was stupid. Mm. Stupid to it. It harmed Onskom. If it was true, they made it possible for Russia and from others to attack Onskom. And second, so that was not in U.S. interest. Mm. I think. Secondly, they didn't get it. I can assure you. It was so.
What do you think were the reasons why Onskom became less effective, or is this not so?
I think Onskom rather was effective, very effective. The problem, at least in technical terms, it became sharper and sharper. The teams were top people. They know better than anyone. They were superior to any intelligence service, much better than American, Israeli, German, what you have, the British, in the full knowledge. No one knew more than us. It was sharper, and it could act. Yeah, we worked there, and we were focusing on one thing. And we could pick all the others' information and co-pool it. They didn't get information from me. We were the only one. So we were absolutely effective. Politically, that was after my time. Onskom became controversial. And that was, of course, politically harmful. And that made it less effective, politically in a way, because it was blocked in the end. And there was no real support. I think the key from my job from day one was to keep the skill council together. I repeat myself to me, and especially the fight, to back all the time. I know that if they didn't back on, and there were breakup, US maybe support, others could, it won't work. It was the only way. That's why I had to travel all the time to count to Tarika Zay to take care of any misgivings. That was a news story in Moscow, in Russia, 96, I think, saying that Onskom was giving target advice for U.S. to bomb Iraq. And I protested that. I worked that so hard, so they were forced to take it back. I never load anything like accusation like the fester. I really took it head on. I went to the restaurant and I said, tell me what this is. Give me proof for that and I can assure you. And so they had to take it back. It took a long time. But
very important that you did that.
But what happened after that broke down, unfortunately. So the council unity broke and they started the queues, blah, blah. So the political effectiveness, to answer your question in one sentence, it broke down because of political effectiveness.
What are your hopes with Anmovic? What are their potential?
I hope that
it depends if
Arnovik is written in a way, the resolution 1284 we set up on it is written more on the basis there is no presumption in 1284 that Iraq has anything left. It only talks about, really actively talks about preventing Iraq to acquire new capability. Which is a good record for UNSCOM. That shows that Security Council thinks that UNSCOM cleaned up everything.
Yes, but now they had a couple of years of
rebuilding. Because the old resolution 67, it had of course the presumption that Iraq was hiding stuff, which was correct. However, I think that the new resolution UNMOVIC, as it is written, is capable and has a right to do everything. Including searching for prohibited items, not only prevent new things to come in, but also search. And Hans Blix, in his statement when he presented his new report, indicated that very clearly. I'm very happy about that. So my sense is that Ulmovic can do the same thing. The key, in the end, always falls down on two things: the political support and the quality of the personnel. If you get good people, you get it done. And that's the mark of the leadership, that a good leader should see to it that he has to, she takes the best person. And that is the mark of success. And there is nothing saying one shouldn't be able to get the best people, but it depends on the leader.
France has always seemed to have a special relationship towards Iraq. Why? Is it due to similarities in nuclear weapons policy, interest in increased trade relationships, or is it something else?
Well, I think France is obviously would like to have a role in the Arabic world, and Iraq now is isolated in the Arabic world, but potentially is with its hard-working population, which is good oil richness, with its two rivers. I mean, it's a country with extraordinary possibilities. Good people, good natural resources, and water. These are key factors. What they miss is a good leader. Otherwise, the country would be a paradise. Extremely wealthy and good. And so long-term, it's, I think, wise to keep good contact with Iraq. I doubt it's wise to keep a good contact with the president. The regime is fundamentally undercuts and destroys these capabilities it has. But France, I think, looking a little on the long-term economic gains. However, it's very important, I think, one must give France absolute credit. My sense is that they are very solid on the weapons issue. In the military circles in France, I think they are concerned that Iraq acquires special nuclear capability. And they will fight, I think they are supporting our actions to prevent that, and they will have strong control. But they like to have both things.
Do you think that changed with the new president?
In France? No, I think, of course, President Chirac, your friend, he was a close friend of Saddam. He visited Baghdad, once. But I think he's been very fair. When I talked with him a couple of years ago, in 95 I think it was, we had a conversation, and he was very supportive. And he said, I promise we will back you to support you. And they did. They were very supportive, and I never complained about them. Always had just to keep them in the picture.
So you would say that the relationship...
And I liked that. They were critical. They asked questions. And I liked that. Instead of sitting home and be sour, and not... I know complaints about French. There I differ. I know my successor hated them in this book.
But do you think...
I don't agree with him.
Do you think that the French is then... that they want a more friendly... like trading relationship.
They would like to come in first. They like to be responsible for the telecommunications. They would like to, of course, and the Elf and Total, the oil companies involved in exploration and the enormous profits which can come there. Of course, they are anxious to be in there as number one. And they also they compete a little with the Russians, being friendly.
Yes, exactly. My next question was just that what are the reasons for China and Russia? What are their reasons for being so Iraq-friendly?
China is not really Iraq. It is just hanging on. They never take the lead in Iraq friendliness. But they solidarize, I suppose to say. They put themselves solidarity with the Russians and the French. Okay. But they never take the lead, as my experience. They have been cooperative and supportive during my time. However, it is clear that China had cooperated with Iraq in the 80s and helping them with missile technology. But we saw during my time, no sign at all, and I don't believe they did. I think China has been quite fair and has not supported Iraq's missile program or any of the other programs. That goes historically back, but as I told you, many others did things also. In China may have been less open about it, but that is their culture.
What were UNSCAM's major accomplishments? What were some of its failures?
Well, the accomplishments are very simple. I mean, that was to identify the whole set of programs. And major, number one, was obviously biological weapons.
Yes.
Because that was the most secretive. There was an ultra-secret program. It was total denial. We have nothing to do with biological weapons. Written repeatedly year after year until our inspectors with their skills cracked it. It was not so. Iraq now tells story that they, their defector, Hussein Kamal in August 95, told us that's not true. In this matter, it's on record that we reported to the council before the defection about the full Iraqi program. And in 96, when we blew up their big, that was the moment of triumph, really. It's videotaped and televised when we blew up this big, sprawling biological weapons facility. That was the wonderful thing and shows an incredibly strong team of scientists and thinkers and good combination of people. That kind of
where was this? In what it was?
It was not far from, some 100 kilometers from Baghdad.
Okay.
I think it took an hour and a half.
Mm.
Yeah, maybe 2 hours. A little more, 100 kilometers. It is from Baghdad. Al-Hakam, what it's called.
Mm.
And that, but also their modern science. We took samples in that area when 91. But the biological samples, but to develop them, we didn't see anything. But with DNA technology, we developed during the 90s. It's fascinating what happened in the 90s. In 93, 94, we took the old samples back and we continued to develop them. And, you know, these machines, how you take a sample, they clean it with detergent, they wash it, they clean it, to take away every remnant of a bacteria or something. But still there are, you know, corner issues to it, so you can maybe little sense. And we say them, and scientists who worked for us came and said, now through DNA we can see traces of anthrax, which is one of the biological.
Yes, exactly.
So that was fantastic. Then we started with other techniques. Whatever. It's a long, wonderful story, but I won't tell it for a long time. But all things together, it was a combination of things which was the great success. The failure, I don't want to put blame on my success, but I think when I left, we had, so the failure was, it's not UNSCOM's or someone else's, was the collapse of the political backing. That was a major failure. On my watch, well, I don't say failure, I think it was okay to start out with a certain innocence, which I was innocent, totally. Not suspecting, believing that they should So that was maybe a short-term failure, but we quickly corrected that. But always, maybe that when we started this search for mobility, that I did not, so to say, outline the limits of that. Because my sense was that what we needed to prove was that Iraq was hiding through mobility. Mm. I thought it was rather naive to believe they could catch it.
Mm.
I told you, when we had them cornered, they wouldn't let us go in. They just put the gun in the stomach and say, you don't do it. And then, of course, the Security Council could say, well, if you don't do it, you bomb. And you remember that happened later on, after me. But I didn't like bombing, and I wanted to avoid bombing. And then I saw no value. I didn't, if the bombing maybe had helped us to get our hands on it, or maybe one hesitant to go along with it. But I was convinced it would work. So I think it was, maybe we should have put a limit on this continuum before I handed over to the successor.
I guess one last question. I won't bother you anymore. Could a mechanism like this be used again in the future?
I think definitely so. I may be relatively lonely, but I think I indicated to my answers.